This message comes from NPR sponsor Progressive Insurance, where drivers who switch could save hundreds on car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
Hey, y'all. This is Sam's Aunt Betty. This week, what happens if the coronavirus is here to stay? And a return to Broadway. All right, let's start the show.
Hey, y'all. You're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR. I'm Sam Sanders. So, pumpkin spice latte season is here. It is fall, a season I like, but we are here again, entering another fall season in a pandemic. I know a lot of us here in the U.S., we are now vaccinated, and some things feel a bit less oppressive than they did last year. But we are not back to normal. Not at all, not by a long shot. And in the midst of that reality, I have begun to, over the last few weeks, suspect that maybe we won't ever go back to the before times. You know, to young, innocent, maskless Sam in a crowded indoor space, dancing with strangers without a super spreader care in the world. But maybe I'm wrong. I hope that I'm wrong. A person can hope, right?
Oh, Sam, I have bad news for you.
Just tell me. That is Catherine Wu. She is a staff writer at The Atlantic. And apparently a dasher of dreams.
So I think, you know, first I will caveat this by saying that we know nothing for sure because all predictions have a way of coming back to bite us, right? Especially during this pandemic. Yeah. But it really feels like the growing consensus at this point is the ship for eradication sailed quite some time ago, at least any time in the near future.
Basically, we had our chance and we blew it. We may have entered a phase that I have begun calling COVID forever. I know, sounds bad, huh? But maybe COVID forever is not all dark and gloomy, and there's a way forward and a reality in which COVID is there, but not so omnipresent.
Yeah, so I think the short version of this is, you know, what we are experiencing right now is the pandemic stage. But eventually what happens is we as hosts start to change. You know, the virus might change a little bit too, but that's certainly less predictable. But basically, immunity is building on our side as the virus infects us repeatedly or we acquire immunity through vaccines. Mm-hmm. So eventually we will reach this kind of inflection point where the virus is still able to circulate among us, but we are just on average less hospitable to it. Outbreaks will be smaller. They might be, you know, even seasonal, occurring at only certain times of the year. And it'll just be sort of more background noise. Good examples of more endemic viruses are going to be like flu viruses, cold viruses, the things we see regularly, but not always and not with this much alarm.
Okay, so then I don't know, that kind of makes me feel a little bit better because in one of your recent pieces for The Atlantic, you used the phrase forever virus, and that just chilled my soul. That sounds really awful, but what I hear you saying is COVID will eventually become something similar in our lives to, like, the flu, and that makes me feel a bit better. So, like, how awful is that reality, really?
Yeah, it's hard to say, right? Because, you know, the sort of barometer we have for this are going to be flu viruses and common cold viruses. And, you know, common cold viruses, several of them are caused by other coronaviruses, you know, distant cousins of the one we're dealing with now, if that's a helpful frame of reference. But I think that is the key distinction here, right? Like when we talk about a virus being around forever, that doesn't always mean we're going to experience it in the same way in perpetuity. And so, you know, that does not mean the pandemic is going to last forever. That does not mean that COVID is even going to be on average as severe as it is now, or even that the virus is going to be as, I guess, spreadable between us. Like outbreaks won't always be this crazy. Okay. So, you know, another way to look at this is like we're headed for an on average lighter version of COVID. It could be our fifth common cold coronavirus. And that is an optimistic scenario that a lot of experts have told me about.
See, Catherine, what I want you to tell me is come New Year 2022, we just turn a corner.
But that's not how COVID works. The ball drops and the threat disappears.
So that's the optimistic case, COVID becoming something that is more manageable and perhaps even seasonal, like the flu. Mm-hmm. What is the more pessimistic case for a year or two of COVID life?
Well, I think all of the scenarios sort of converge on this idea that it basically does become endemic, but endemic can have many flavors or sort of degrees of severity. Say, for example, you know, the virus continues to mutate and sort of adapt. Maybe it gets faster at spreading between people, or it picks up a couple mutations that make it a little bit less recognizable to our immune system, so our vaccines don't work quite as well. Or, you know, like us as hosts, we don't do as good a job of remembering the virus from an immune system standpoint. You know, like think of how we deal with the flu every year. It is kind of this background noise virus, but the flu is certainly nothing trivial.
It kills people. I got to get a new shot every year at the CVS.
Exactly. Yeah, I just got mine on Saturday. It's something that we have to really actively manage. Maybe a way to think about it is like that's kind of a high maintenance endemic virus. But, you know, SARS-CoV-2, the new coronavirus, doesn't necessarily have to look like that. Maybe it could be something...
I will say, from my experience thus far, COVID has been pretty high maintenance.
No, exactly. And it has been high maintenance so far. But remember, this is the pandemic phase. Maybe it'll be less high maintenance than the flu when it hits its endemic phase. But we just don't have any promises about that yet.
Yeah. So talking about this longer timeline of risk reducing over time, but with potential blips, what does that look like, I don't know, 2 or 5 years from now? Are we still going to see people wearing masks at the grocery store? Like, are certain parts of COVID life kind of here to stay for the long haul, at least for the next few years?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think that's something that a lot of us are trying to start to reckon with. I think the way that we have been living life during the pandemic is not sustainable on a population level. We do have to find a middle ground, but, you know, maybe it's not a bad idea for us to mask up in public during the colder months when we know that a lot of respiratory viruses have a really easy time moving into our airways. Or, you know, maybe there is just better etiquette about not going to work when you feel super sick, which was not enough of a thing in the before times, right?
Yeah.
I feel like those things, I would love to see some of those things stick around.
Yeah, I hope the masks stick around. It makes me feel at peace a little more. And it takes off that sometimes burden of like having to smile at strangers. You know, like you make weird eye contact in the cheese aisle at the grocery store, and then you're like, oh, I gotta smile and say hello. With the mask on, you don't have to.
Yep.
Such freedom. Such freedom.
I love that too. I am kind of like an angry introvert sometimes, and this has just made things a lot easier.
Yes. So we'll have to become better as Americans making peace with this, you know, quote unquote, COVID forever life. But we can be flexible, and we've shown ourselves to be flexible. But it seems as if a lot of our institutions can't accommodate that kind of disruption or flexibility. We've seen how public schools, how daycares, how offices, how the infrastructure of our day-to-day lives, how they haven't been able to keep up with crazy COVID's fits and starts. Do you see American institutions getting better at dealing with this reality over time?
This is a tough question. I think we have the ingenuity and we have the capability to build in the infrastructure so that these things are more bearable, that outbreaks are more containable in the future. But I do think, you know, we have to inject some realism into this, right? Humans have kind of a short attention span. We've been through big epidemics and outbreaks before, and we haven't always learned from them. I hope that changes this time around, but it's not necessarily a guarantee. And, you know, excuse me while I very briefly get on a soapbox here, but, think of all the inequities that this pandemic has just made more visible. They were here before the pandemic. They were exacerbated by the pandemic. And even if we end up with a virus that is, on average, less threatening, it's still going to concentrate risk and suffering in groups that have really been bearing a lot of that burden before. What are we going to do to fix that? I think that's a huge thing we have to grapple with. Like, adding yet another respiratory virus to our seasonal repertoire is not a trivial thing. We didn't have to be at this point. We didn't have to add to this burden. We ended up doing it, and we will find a way to live with it, but do we have to do it again in the future? I don't think so.
Lord, I hope not.
Yeah.
I hope we don't have to do this again. You know, one of your colleagues at The Atlantic, she wrote something in a piece that she published about COVID that really spoke to me, and it was soothing to me. Your colleague, Sarah Zhang, she wrote about this new normal, this COVID forever idea, and she said, quote, "It will feel strange for a while, and then it will not. It will be normal." And that got to me. And I think it's a reminder that humans as a species are incredibly adaptable, whether we believe it or not and whether we like it or not. And, you know, not to quote Jurassic Park, but yes, to actually quote Jurassic Park, life finds a way. We will figure this out.
Absolutely. I mean, as like a microcosm of this, I think about, you know, when I was, I think 8 years old, I had to get glasses and I hated the idea. I had to put them on my face. They itched. It was such a pain. Like, I couldn't see anything when I was showering. It was the worst. But eventually I stopped feeling them. We are adaptable. We can incorporate things in our lives to make things more livable. I have high hopes for that at the very least.
You know, at some point we'll be sleeping in our masks. Give it time. Oh, God. I take it back.
No, no, no.
I take
no.
it back. That sounds so
no,
sad.
No, no.
Oh, my God. Thanks again to Catherine Wu. She is a staff writer at The Atlantic. Listeners, stay with us. The coronavirus might be here forever, but at least we'll have Broadway. Coming up, I chat with Heidi Schreck and Cassie Beck. They're both from the play What the Constitution Means to Me. We discuss the return of live theater, thank goodness, and we talk about how theater has changed for the long term.
Okay, close your eyes for a second. Now imagine you're on your dream vacation. No work calls to answer, no text messages to respond to, just your suitcase and an opportunity.
The opportunity to just take yourself out of your routine and travel deeper.
How to actually take that dream trip. That's on the Life Kit podcast from NPR.
Every time you drive your car, have a package delivered, or get on a plane, you're polluting the climate. But it doesn't have to be that way.
Nature is powerful. Why don't we use it to our advantage?
Meet the people working on cleaner ways to get around on Here and Now Anytime from NPR and WBUR. Transportation Climate Solutions on Here and Now Anytime, wherever you listen to podcasts.
On NPR's Throughline,
we cannot function for 24 hours without cobalt because it's in our smartphone, our tablet, our laptop. And as a consequence, the lives of the people living in that part of the Congo descended into just a catastrophe.
Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Instead of scrolling mindlessly, engage mindfully with the NPR app. With a mix of on-demand news, stories from this station, and your favorite podcast, you can relax without shutting off your brain. Download the NPR app today.
There are a lot of issues on voters' minds right now. Six big ones could help decide the election. Guns, reproductive rights, immigration, the economy, healthcare, and the wars overseas. On the Consider This podcast from NPR, we will unpack the debates on these issues and what's at stake. You can listen to NPR's Consider This wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR. I'm Sam Sanders. And I'm going to tell you all a little secret right now. I am a bit of a theater nerd. I love to memorize the lyrics of a good musical soundtrack, like all the words. I love the cheap theater wine. I love knowing a show well enough to be able to say the lines with the actors when they're on stage. I love to wait outside after the show to tell those actors how great I think they are. But like most things over the last year and a half or so, COVID has changed a lot of that stuff. In big ways. And it took some of that stuff away altogether. Some of the entertainment industry is coming back, TV and film especially, with a lot of COVID precautions. But theaters have remained mostly shuttered, and a whole lot of theater cast and crew are still in limbo. But live theater is beginning to come back. Shows like Hamilton and Waitress and The Lion King, they all reopened this month on Broadway. And my next guest, I caught them right before they hit the road on tour with their show.
I'm Heidi Schreck. I'm a playwright, writer of What the Constitution Means to Me, and an actor.
And I'm Cassie Beck. I am playing Heidi in What the Constitution Means to Me. I'm an actor.
In 2019, Heidi Schreck premiered her mostly solo show on Broadway. It's called What the Constitution Means to Me.
When I was 15 years old, I would travel the country giving speeches about the United States Constitution for prize money. This was a scheme invented by my mom, a debate coach, to help me pay for college. I would travel to big cities like Denver, Fresno. I would win a whole bunch of money.
This show was nominated for a Tony, and it was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize for drama. But in March 2020, in the midst of a short run in Chicago, COVID hit. At that time, Cassie Beck was getting ready to take over the lead role. And she said, at first, she was hopeful.
Yeah, I was totally naive. I was believing the 2 weeks and then like a couple months. But we had a friend who's an epidemiologist who called us, my husband and I, and was like, this is not how pandemics work. It's going to be a year.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
And so we were a little prepared, but hopeful. And then the show, you know, I was supposed to, let's see, the shutdown was in March. I was supposed to start rehearsals for Constitution in June. And I thought, well, maybe, just maybe, by June, you know, it'll stay on track. And then I think we pushed back 3 months, and then we pushed back another 3 months. And then after that, it was just like, all right, I'll hear from you when we're all through this.
Y'all let me know. Yeah.
But we're really, really fortunate, honestly, that the show gets to continue and go on. There are a lot of shows that never saw the light of day or just getting started and ended up shutting down. And so I feel super fortunate.
Yeah. You know, I was, you know, like when I think about what happened last year when things got shut down, a lot of folks went to work from home life, but I'm guessing the majority of theater professionals can't do that. For both of you and for your industry writ large, what were all the Broadway folk, for the most part, doing in this last year of shutdown? Nothing, or things that I didn't know about? Tell me.
Oh, that's a good question.
I think a little of both. We all tried to help each other. You know, we have this amazing child wrangler on Constitution who took care of the teenagers, and so she was out of work because she also works for Lion King. So I was lucky enough. She got to come. I hired her to be my babysitter, which was really nice because we were already like a family. And I think people tried to help one another out and give each other work. I will say, though, also this like incredible movement of digital theater did begin during this time. And there have been some like brilliant things that happened. I don't know if you know, like a play called Circle Jerk.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Which was just like the most genius thing ever, like completely digital, very highly produced. Jeremy O'Harris was a producer with like, you know, a great production values, became a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. There's the Ratatouille musical.
I praise you, oh Ratatouille, may the world remember your name.
I think there's a sense in which like tremendous innovative things are happening, and also maybe we're at a point where theater can become more accessible and not just for wealthy people to watch.
Yeah.
Well said, Heidi. I think, and it does swing up into the hopeful. I was thinking about, you know, as we kind of got a handle on it and moved forward, I think, like Heidi said, a kind of forced creativity. I mean, theater people are immensely creative anyway. So this was a new way to try to express ourselves and connect. I mean, that's really kind of, we're in the business of connection. And we sort of have to do it. And, you know, come hell or high water, we did. And some great work has come out of it. I was fortunate as well. I got cast on this TV show that I shot out of my house for okay. NBC called Connecting. Speaking of connecting, connection.
Yeah.
And So they sent, you know, NBC sent me all this professional lighting equipment and set dressing, and costumes were dropped off in my lobby of my building, and I had to go down and pick
stressful.
It up. And
that well, sounds really stressful. You're your own crew
suddenly,
now.
I was suddenly a crew, and I learned a ton, and I have a whole new respect. But yeah, so super creative and a learning curve, really, for all of us. We're getting into podcasts, we're getting into recording, you know, all kinds of mediums that we're trying to meld together with live theater and make something totally new.
Yeah. I want to talk briefly about what y'all are doing with your show, which is going on tour while COVID is still a reality. So What the Constitution Means to Me is about to go on a national tour. I'm assuming a lot has changed with coronavirus protocols. How much of the show will change, and how much of the way that the folks making the show on the road, how much will their work change because of however you have to do whatever to be COVID safe?
Well, we are definitely vaccinated. The whole company.
That is a good start.
That is a good start. We are tested multiple times a week. So our room is amazing. You know, speaking of coming back to theater, one of the ways that we are addressing safety, and this is sort of our director, Oliver Butler, kind of kicked off our rehearsal with acknowledging that for most of us in the room, this is the first day back to work over a year for a lot of us. And what does the word safe mean? How can every person make sure that the room is safer? And, you know, the physical embodiment is our COVID officer who we have with us, who's assigned to our project, who sits in our rehearsal room and hands out masks and has you know, sanitizer and administers all the tests for us every week. And just make sure that we're following protocol, you know, social distancing when we can, only when we're working can we remove the mask, and then, you know, we put the mask back on. No treats, no shared foods, those kinds of things. So it's a whole new sense of protocol, you know, just to keep everybody comfortable and really safe.
Yeah. So the show was very interactive.
Yeah.
And the nature of theater is very interactive, you know, autograph signings, meet and greets, backstage tours. A lot of that goes away. This is for both of you. Last question. How do you generate that same kind of live energy, that give and take with the audience, both during the show and before and after, when you probably can't touch anybody?
I have to say that, first of all, we have made a few adjustments. Like in the show before, we would hand out pocket constitutions. Like ushers would go out. It was very like interactive, sort of physically. Everyone left with a pocket constitution that ushers handed out. There was a lot of like, the play opens up at the end to be kind of a, you know, a civic event. And so we're working on how to do that now. We're not going to be able to do that in the same way, which is kind of sad. But the touching question, I find just really deep because I'm struggling with it in every aspect of my life. I'm a very, you know, tend to be a hugger and
same.
Yeah. And like, I went to my first rehearsal last week and, you know, had to tell someone I love and I've known for 10 years that I wasn't going to hug them because I have the babies, and it, also like having to learn to say no in that way to people I love is really hard. And I don't know how it will turn out. I really loved getting to talk to people at the stage door, and I will miss that. And I assume Cassie will miss that too. Luckily, there people reach out a lot by social media, so that helps.
Also, some of it you'll never get rid of. Like, I remember going to plays, even like back in San Antonio, Texas, as a kid, and like I wanted to see the actors, and I wanted to say thank you for doing this, and I would wait by that back door until they came out, and I would just say, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And there's going to be kids still doing
Sam.
That.
You're our favorite kind of person.
I was that kid. And I feel
like
you're never going
to... Listen, I'm that kind of adult.
Yes. Those kids are still going to be there. And like, even if they have to wave at you from 6 feet away at the door, they're going to be there, right?
They are going to be there. And you know what? I think from a mental health perspective, if this is all we can get, it's still important you know, to just, like I said, be in a dark room together sharing a story. If that's all we can get right now, so be it. We really need that connection.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I am happy and excited that theater is still pressing on, and I can't wait to see how it changes for the better. And I am excited for you both as you start this touring journey.
Thank you.
And congrats on keeping it going.
Thank you,
well,
Sam.
Thank you.
All right. Well, you both stick around with me to play a game after the break. It's called Who Said That? Okay. Yeah. All righty.
Across America, history is often recorded on small markers. You've probably seen them on the sides of roads, in front of buildings, in the middle of nowhere. NPR's Laura Sullivan spent a year investigating thousands of markers and found a distorted version of America's history, but also curiosities, humor, and joy. Listen to the new episode of The Sunday Story on the Up First podcast from NPR.
In this country, more than two local newspapers are closing down each week. As news deserts grow, public radio is a lifeline for staying informed. Keep that service strong with a donation to the NPR network at donate.npr.org. And thank you.
Taylor Swift has dropped a new album. She is the biggest pop star in the world, and everything she does makes news.
I gasped. I was like, oh my God, I've been there, and you can identify with it.
For a breakdown of Taylor Swift and her new album, The Tortured Poets Department, listen to the Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast from NPR.
Hey, I hear you have a birthday coming up. Yeah, you. If you're listening to this, that means you have a birthday coming up eventually. And here at Life Kit, we want it to be a special one.
Magic can happen and good luck can happen and serendipity can happen if we're open to it.
How to have a good birthday, even if you're not a birthday person. That's on the Life Kit podcast from NPR.
If you've never donated to the NPR network before, that's okay. Public radio is available to everyone for free. But we do rely on listener support from those who are able to give. So join the community of supporters for Public Media Giving Days, coming up on May 1st and 2nd. Please give at donate.npr.org, and thank you.
You're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR. I am joined right now by two great guests from the world of theater, and they're going to tell you who they are. Go ahead.
I'm Heidi Schreck, playwright of What the Constitution Means to Me.
And I'm Cassie Beck, performer in What the Constitution Means to Me.
All right. I want you both now to play a very competitive, high-stakes game with me called Who Said That?
Ooh, saying that?
Who said that?
I kid. It's low stakes. This game is quite easy. I share three quotes from the week of news. You got to tell me who said it. I'll give you a bunch of hints. Yell out the answer whenever you have it. And just know that the winner gets nothing. So have fun. Have fun.
I have to say, I did listen to the weekly update on the political podcast today because I was like, I got to prepare for Sam Sanders. I'm just going to ask me some questions and maybe they'll help me.
Maybe,
I love that show, by the
maybe.
Way.
Yeah, I love that show too.
Group.
I was telling Sam that it reminds me of my dad quizzing me. He's a history teacher.
Oh, yeah.
He would quiz me on current events every Friday.
Oh, jeez.
I was always like, this was the 80s. So basically, I was like, Brezhnev. So if I shout out Brezhnev, that's why.
Shout out Brezhnev. It might be close. Yeah. Who knows? All right. Here's the first quote. It comes from one of the most famous invisible men in the world. The quote is, I'm still alive, though some wanted me dead. Who said that?
Pope Francis.
Yes.
Good job, Heidi.
I don't know why I know that.
That's so awesome.
So this story, it's kind of amazing. So Pope Francis had to have a colon operation earlier this summer. And this month, he said that some people in the Catholic Church might have hoped that he would not survive the operation.
Yeah. I think he's right, too. I think there are people who, he said some pretty radical things lately. I think that there are some people who probably feel that way.
Yeah. It's funny, though, like, as soon as I saw that quote from the Pope saying, I'm still alive, though some wanted me dead, I wanted the drama and the beef to escalate. Like, I want Pope Francis to drop a mixtape calling out all of his haters. I need that. Imagine.
Oh, yes. Oh, my God. I want that, too.
I do, too, now.
Who does that point go to? I think it goes to Heidi.
Heidi.
Yes.
Okay.
But I play Heidi, so.
Yeah, it's like you both got the point,
it's,
right?
It's we both get. I'm just going to claim every point that Heidi gets.
Yes, yes, yes. This one is a fill in the blank. Here it is. The global hit blank, which attracted 64 million households in the first 4 weeks after its March 2020 premiere, will return to Netflix for more Madness and Mayhem.
Ooh.
Madness and Mayhem.
The show we all watched together last March.
Well, some of us were giving birth.
Okay. You win that one. You win on that one.
What's happening in March? Oh, my God. We were all watching something, and it was
a crazy documentary reality show. It involved animals.
Yes. Yes. I'm going to make up some titles.
Make it up. Make it up.
Crocodile Man. Florida Alligator.
The one with the tiger and the...
Yes.
Tiger,
so
yes.
Tiger what? Tiger what?
Tiger King.
Tiger
yes,
King.
Okay.
Wow.
That one goes to Cassie with a lot of help. Did either of you actually watch Tiger King? Sorry.
Apparently
not. About it.
The truth is I did. But okay. I can't remember anything anymore. The two babies actually ate my brain. That's true. I read about it, that if you're growing babies inside you, they eat your brain cells. And I had two of them.
Sounds about right.
So really all I can remember is stuff from the 80s.
Yes. Anywho, this was like the first hit of the pandemic that everyone watched together.
It's not every day that a zookeeper went to prison for murder for hire.
And because Netflix gonna Netflix, they're already bringing it back.
I was gonna say, did you say a season two?
Yeah. They're doing a sequel already, and this show has not been out for more than a year. Just more than a year.
So it doesn't end with the tiger eating somebody or something?
The tigers haven't eaten anybody
yet. That's Grizzly Man. You're thinking of Grizzly Man.
Okay.
This game is tied.
Okay.
And this is gonna be the tiebreaker. This last quote came out of a very big trial happening right now in the country. Here's the quote. My new life as of this night and forevermore. Total confidence in myself. Best business person of the year. Focus, details, excellence. Don't give what anyone thinks. Engage employees in meetings by stories and making it about them, i.e. prepare well. What disgraced tech executive was texting this?
Elizabeth Holmes.
Yes, that's it. That is
it. You know what? Weirdly, I first was trying to say Thanos.
Well, because her company was Theranos, Theranos, however you say it.
Yeah, yes. Because I think Thanos.
It's the Marvel character.
Yes. It's a Marvel character. So we all know the story by now, I think, because there's so much content about this story. There are podcasts, there are books, there are movies coming. Anywho, Elizabeth Holmes, the disgraced tech executive, she's on trial right now. She had this company, Theranos, that basically claimed with just a drop or two of your blood, they could test you for like dozens of diseases and traits and all kinds of stuff. Turns out science doesn't work like that. But she wasn't found out for years.
Yeah, Walgreens, right? Walgreens had whole stations. And people would show up for their appointments and they're like, never mind, we're just going to take your blood the old way.
The old-fashioned way.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So in the midst of this trial, text messages from Holmes that she sent to her then-boyfriend have also been released. You know, thousands of private text and Skype messages. And some of the most strange, sad, and hilarious communication comes from these messages that she would send to her then-boyfriend, Theranos president Sonny Balwani. And she'd send these long, engaging, sometimes loving texts to him, and he just wouldn't write back. So, that first quote that I read to y'all from her, one of her texts to her boyfriend, 10 minutes after sending that message, she texted again to her boyfriend, "No response, ? And he finally responded, "Awesome. You are listening and paying attention." So no matter how high you rise in this world, you might have to suffer through an inattentive boyfriend.
Wow. A like I just had like a flicker of sympathy for her when you described that.
I know. For a second, I was just like, been there, girl. Well, yeah, kind of. But same, girl, same.
So we should say, just to clarify, the behavior of Theranos and Holmes is allegedly fraudulent. She claims that her business just failed and that failure isn't the same as fraud.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear. But, you know, I'll wait.
We'll wait. Yeah. On that note, one thing is pretty clear. The winner of this game, congratulations to Heidi. You won.
Yeah. Yay, Heidi.
Thanks, Cassie. I did. I'm not going to lie. I found myself becoming really competitive during it. And I realized how much I like to win. And I'm sorry, Cassie, if I was at all obnoxious. But I did realize that I desperately wanted to win the game.
No apology necessary. I can see your face on the video, and I knew that I was in for a loss. So I just decided to claim all your points for myself. That's how I decided to handle this situation.
Perfect. It's a communal win. Everybody's a winner, right? Everybody's
no.
a winner.
Yes. Heidi won't accept that.
Uh-huh. Well, this was so much fun. Thank you both, Heidi and Cassie, for being here. Listeners, their show, What the Constitution Means to Me, it is going on tour. Go see where it's headed and see if you can check it out yourself. It'll be a good time. Thank you both, and best of luck with your theater year, or the rest of it.
Thank you, Sam. Yeah. Thank you. Best of luck with everything.
Thank you, Sam.
Thanks again to my guests, playwright Heidi Schreck and actor Cassie Beck.
Now it's time to end the show as we always do. Every week, listeners share the best thing that happened to them all week. We encourage folks to brag, and they do. Let's hear a few of those submissions.
Hi, this is Amy from Dayton, Ohio. Best thing that's happened to me this week is tonight I got 4-week-old pit bull puppies dropped off to temporarily foster. They're all snuggled up on my lap snoozing after eating their dinner, and it's just really peaceful here.
Hi, Sam. This is Ashley from Berkeley, California. 4 years ago, I contacted you to let you know the best part of my week was when I dropped my wife off at her first day of nursing school. Now, I'm so happy to report that our best part of the week is that she's officially a licensed nurse in the state of California.
The best thing that happened to me this week was I got to watch my son and his high school marching band perform. It was just very heartfelt and wonderful.
Hi, Sam. This is Nancy from Stonecrest, Georgia, to tell you about the most wonderful thing that happened to me this week. I was awarded my doctorate in ministry degree from South University in Savannah. I graduated with high honors just 5 months after my 80th birthday. You know, they say you're never too old to learn. You have a great day, Sam.
Hope you get to have something to celebrate, too.
Thanks, Sam, for everything you do. I enjoy listening to you so much.
Thanks to all those listeners you heard there, Amy, Ashley, Patty, and Nancy. Listeners, don't forget, you can be a part of this segment, too. Send us your best thing at any time throughout any week. We love hearing from all of you. Just record yourself and send that voice memo to me via email, samsanders@npr.org. samsanders@npr.org. All right, this week, It's Been a Minute was produced by Janae West, Anjali Sastry, Andrea Gutierrez, Liam McBain, and Sam Yellowhorse Kessler. Our fearless editor is Jordana Hochman, and our big boss is NPR's senior VP of programming, Anya Grundman. All right, listeners, till next time, be good to yourselves. I'm Sam Sanders. We'll talk soon.
On Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, we have very important people on our show and then ask them about very unimportant things. Here's U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen.
We are also reliably informed that among your enthusiasms, in addition to macroeconomic policy, is mobile games.
There is some truth in that.
There's some truth in that.
Join us for the NPR podcast that considers all the other things. That's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
These days, news comes at you fast. But the truth? Getting there takes time.
There's something that hasn't been disclosed yet.
Embedded is a podcast that takes the time to look beyond the headlines.
How did this happen? How did we get here?
With original documentary storytelling. Listen to NPR's Embedded wherever you get your podcasts. Listen to Embedded for moments that stay with you.
I could smell the smoke. I could smell the dust.
Voices that resonate. Stories that change the way you think about your life.
How did we get here?
The Embedded podcast is NPR's home for original documentary series. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.